G'day guys, Kirk Capewell here. Welcome to the very first podcast, David Mead's changed the name. It's now Mindset Podcast. I'm number one on the episode. Listen now and you'll hear about my journey to NRL and all the lessons I've learned along the way. Cheers.
All right. Capes, thanks for appearing on the podcast.
David, thank you very much for having me on, mate.
No worries, pleasure. Mate. I've actually changed the name of the podcast. It's Mindset. It's changed from the David Mead podcast to Mindset. So you're actually the first guest to be on this
Numero episode. Numero uno, how good.
Yeah.
It's the best. Well, Mindset, yeah, looks good. The backdrop too, I must admit.
Yeah, and you know what, Mindset, what better guest to have on than yourself? I know we first met at an army camp for the
yeah.
Brisbane Broncos, which involved a lot of mindset and obviously all the physical stuff that comes with it. You know, you're tired and fatigued and stuff, but that's where I met you. And I feel like I got to know the real you in camp because we were under a lot of fatigue, stress.
Under duress, yes.
Yeah.
Some would say I was under a bit more than most as it was my first day of preseason that day too. So I come in a bit later than everyone else, but.
Yeah, so we were on the bus. We got to the army camp, and it was in December. The hot day, green ants on the field, long grass. It was about 8:30 in the morning, probably about 35 degrees at that point. And we had these 100 meter, all these drills set up by the SAS guys.
Yeah,
and you know, the first experience was the green ants biting the back neck.
I reckon the worst experience was listening to Oatsy whinge about it the whole time. There's green ants.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was one of those things where I was like, this is going to be a... We've already done them before, but
yeah.
At that point you're thinking, I've got 2 or 3 days of this. Did you have any approach to how you would handle that type of
situation? Yeah, well, that one, obviously, like I said, that was the first... my first day as a Bronco was straight into army camp, so I hadn't actually done too much to prepare myself fitness-wise, and I sort of just threw myself in the deep end when it came to that. But I thought the first drill, as you said, was a fitness test, and it was down the ground, you know, 100 meter runs up and back. And I thought, I'll go balls out in this and hell for leather and just see where I'm at physically, because like I said, I didn't prepare myself in the weeks leading up, which was a mistake, which I found out. But I went pretty well in the fitness in comparison to most of the team. I think I might have been in the top 10, which was, you know, a big surprise to myself, and it gave me a lot of confidence heading into that army camp. I know that I personally love army camp, so it was something that I was looking forward to. And once I knew that I was just as fit as everyone else, I like I said, it just gave me that confidence to know that I'll be able to get through the army camp pretty easy.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the army camp and you know, the mindset stuff a little bit further into the podcast, but. What was your upbringing like? Where were you born, and what was your upbringing like?
Yeah, so I had a pretty good upbringing. I was born in a little country town called Charleville. Not too many people out there really, you know, move down to the city and give things a shake. But I was lucky enough to go away to boarding school at Ipswich Grammar and play a fair bit of sport there. And then, my parents backed me all the way, and I thought, stuff it, I'll just move down after school and just got a job as a carpenter and out at Ipswich, played some footy out there, and then, yeah, progressed into under 20s and then into Queensland Cup and then into NRL.
What was Charleville like? It's a bit of pigging. I know you're
it was
a relative
good.
Of yours.
Yeah, yeah.
Luke lived with him. He loved his pigging stories.
Luke, just for everyone who's watching this, I'm not Luke, I'm Kurt. as much as all the commentators seem to think I'm Luke, I still don't know what's going on there. But, so we grew up... on a little farm just outside of town, mum and dad bought. I was one of four boys, so you can imagine all the games of footy in the backyard we had. And we had horses, lucky enough to play polo cross every weekend. So horses were a big thing in my life growing up. And then obviously we had pigging, you know, we'd go shooting whenever we wanted. We could go fishing out there whenever we wanted, and motorbikes, horses, the lot. So we're very lucky to have that growing up. And it's definitely a different lifestyle from what most of the, you know, the city boys grew up doing. And I love getting back out there and being able to go back to my childhood and do those things.
And how old were you when you left Charleville?
Yeah, so I left I'd done year 11 and 12 at Ipswich Grammar. So 15, 16. So yeah,
that's a boarding school?
Yeah, boarding school. Yeah, all boys boarding school. And
how'd you handle that move?
Yeah, all my brothers had done it before me, so they all loved it. And yeah, that sort of gave me confidence to know that I'd like it. It's obviously a big change living away from home, and I guess down in the city, I couldn't believe how different everyone looked, which is sort of weird to think about now. But like, I grew up in a town where I'd seen everyone in that town every day for the past 15 years, so I knew what everyone looked like. And I got down and I thought everyone looked so weird. You know, they didn't look like country people. And I just remember talking to my mate Morgan Collins, who was in school with me, and he was from Charleville as well. And we just used to look at each other and go, what's going on with everyone here? They all got different hair, and we just thought they were weird. But anyway, turns out they weren't, and we were the weird ones.
It's a different thing, when you're moving from a different place, and especially from a country town.
Well, as you'd know about coming across from PNG.
Yeah. Well, I lived in the village, which was about half hour from Moresby, so I was exposed to a lot of, you know, different cultures. And although it's central province, there's a lot of different people from different cultures speaking different languages, so I was kind of exposed to that.
Yeah.
But in terms of moving to Lismore, English was like my second language, so I didn't say a word.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, scary thing for a lot of guys. And how did you find that switch from, I guess what I'm trying to say is, how did you handle it? Did you find it challenging at first, or were you fine?
Yeah, obviously I found it challenging. New school, not many friends. I was lucky I had Morgan with me, who was, you know, I'd grown up, done all my schooling with him as well. But I guess I was lucky in the fact that, you know, it's an all-boys boarding school, so you got to make mates. You know, you live in there, so you're going to have friends. And there was so much sport that I could do. So, and throughout my whole life, obviously moving from Brisbane down to Sydney, I've been lucky that rugby league has instantly given me, you know, a bit of a family and friendship group straight away. So, yeah, my advice to anyone who's moving cities, or, you know, moving from the country into the city, or even moving countries, would be to really just, you know, if you're not even in sport, join a social sport club and join a few things outside of work where you can meet some people and you know, have something where it's enjoyable and yeah, you can make some new friends.
Yeah, because I'm going into like a mentoring role for young PNG guys coming over from PNG into Australia, joining a few NRL clubs. And the easier thing would be to stick to your small clique,
yeah,
you know, and just hang with that and not go out and spend time with the boys.
Yeah, that's right.
What would you advise? Because my advice would be, you know, go have coffee with...
Yeah, that's right. Go have coffee, or even, I know like PNG boys might not play golf, but you know, a lot of the boys at the clubs these days play golf. So maybe go and have a hit of golf with them, and you'll be surprised how much fun it is, and you'll bond over that, and having coffees, and you know, go and have lunch with different groups each week, and try and mix and mingle into the whole squad, I guess, because as you said, it's easy to sometimes, if you come over with a couple of PNG boys, to sort of stick to that clink. But yeah, just go and put yourself out there.
It's good advice, because sometimes it takes years for the boys to get to that point. And I'm seeing Nixon Put, he spent a fair bit of time with North Devils and now with Capras. Whenever I speak to him, he's kind of come out of his shell. He's asking me all these questions. And, you know, he's very different to when he first came over. But I'm trying to help them do that.
Not take
so much time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'd love for the boys to be able to land a couple of months, they're just feeling comfortable.
Well, the hardest part's done. You know, you've made the commitment to come over. You've taken that leap of faith. So that's the hardest part out of the road. Like you say, leaning into it and then, you know, using that momentum to really make the most of it as quickly as possible. That's easier than taking the leap of faith.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess for a little bit more advice on the, you know, Hunters guys or some Pacific Island guys, listeners, you probably would have seen over your time in team meetings and stuff, there's not really much the lads speaking up. I know there's a bit more now, more so than the past couple of years. Would you have any advice for guys like that who are, or you know, a couple of other Pacific Island guys you've seen speak out? Is there something you can help these guys kind of get out of the shell and speak out in meetings a lot more? Because I know this is a big issue with, especially with PNG and a couple of other Pacific Islands.
Yeah, you can always start, I guess, by, if you have any questions and if you're a bit shy and don't want to talk in front of the group, just write them down on a notebook, and then obviously go and see the coach after the meeting, because coaches are there to coach, so make sure you lean on them as much as you can. But moving forward, I guess you'll get a bit of confidence out of knowing that that's not a stupid question. There's no such thing as a stupid question, but, you know, if like you said at the start, you're a bit shy to speak in front of people, then I'd suggest to write it down and go see the coach one-on-one and still get those questions answered. But then once you've done that a few times, I guess you develop the confidence to know that your questions aren't stupid and you can actually speak out, because you would be so surprised how many people sitting in there behind you are thinking the exact same thing and are in the same position, don't feel like putting their hand up and speaking out. So just, again, take the leap of faith. It's not that hard, and lean into it.
Yeah, and because a lot of the guys that play for the Kumuls and, you know, Hunters, they're looked up to by a lot of the students and kids back home as well. And they don't realise that a lot of the examples they set for, you know, themselves and the people around them are massive, and they're followed by all the kids. So I guess this type of advice would certainly apply for students in class as well. And being too shy to ask that.
Yeah, definitely. You can see
that stupid question. You know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And as I said, you could use that in class as well. Just write down your question and wait till the end of class, and you can go and ask the teacher one-on-one if you want. But as I said, the more times you do that, the more confident you'll get in your questions. And yeah, just take that leap of faith.
Yep. And going back to your time at Ipswich Grammar, did you always want to play rugby league professionally, or was that...
Obviously, I always... That was a dream, you know, as a kid, growing up in the backyard, commentating yourself, chipping and chasing, doing whatever with your brothers. But I never really thought it would ever become a reality. I guess when I moved to Ipswich Grammar, I played a bit of rugby union. I wasn't the greatest player, and even when I was playing league as under 16s, I never really made any rep teams as such, but just persisted because I loved the game, which I know that a lot of PNG boys do too. They just play footy for the fun of it. So it never really became a reality for me until after school, I guess. I made the under 20s, and I sort of thought, oh, you know, like, that's pretty big for me. I thought that was, you know, a great achievement. And but then, you know, the stats of someone from your under 20s team going on to play NRL was 3%. So I never thought I was in the top 3% of the competition, but I was happy to make that team, and I was happy to grind away and get as many games as I could. Once that all finished, I went back to Ipswich, just working as a carpenter again and playing under Ben and Shane Walker, because their style of footy sort of suited the way I like to play the game. And we were lucky enough to get a lot of success, and I had a lot of enjoyable times there and just loved playing footy there. So I guess with that enjoyment brought success, and from that I was lucky enough to get picked up. And I still, to this day, even when I got signed by the Sharks, didn't think I'd end up playing NRL. I thought I was going down there as, you know, sort of to make up the numbers. And it took a whole year of playing New South Wales Cup until origin period it was, and they had about five or six people in origin, so I was lucky enough to get a start then. But and even then I was like, oh, I've played NRL now, like, I don't know how many games I'm going to play. I think the average is 30, is it, or something like that?
Yeah, something. Yeah, I don't know the stats, but it's pretty low.
Yeah, I still take, you know, like, I pinch myself when, you know, you run out every week and to do this for a job and to do it successfully, and, you know, to play Origin, it's just blown my mind that I've made it this far, considering, like I said, I never thought I was a chance.
Yeah, well, you never really think in that 3%, and it's a huge number of players that come through, and obviously there's a few ways of thinking and, you know, routine habits that you can adopt that'll put you in that 3%.
Definitely.
I don't know if you did that consciously or unconsciously. You sound like you enjoyed your footy and always trained pretty hard, but did you ever do any extras, or did you put a plan in place to help you get in that 3%, or did that kind of...
Well, I guess I was definitely, I still to this day will say that I was never in the top 10% talented players, because, you know, I wasn't as talented as the rest. I wasn't as fast, wasn't as strong. I was this gangly teenager that just sort of done his job, and, you know, every now and then he'd do something that would come off. But the Walker brothers really instilled a bit of a hard work ethic, I guess. I was playing under 18s for Ipswich, so they trained two nights a week, and Queensland Cup trained the just so happened to be the other three nights of the week. And I think I was living with Ben Walker at that time, and he said, you know, there's no such thing as overtraining. Come and train with us as well on the nights off. So I end up training every night of the week, which was, you know, as an 18-year-old, you know, probably wasn't that actually hard on the body. I could handle it. I don't think I'd be able to do it now.
Probably a lot more than the other 18-year-olds too.
But that's the thing, yeah, I was doing a lot more than what everyone else was. And I've always been very competitive, so I hate losing any fitness drills. And, yeah, I hate losing if we got a team task on the army camp. Like, I've always been competitive. It's in my nature because I've got three older brothers that I was competing with my whole life. So, yeah, eventually I guess my, you know, I didn't have the natural talent, but I had the work ethic, and that's probably what got me there in the end.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I always think back, and I've spoken countless times in the, whether it's in the sauna, you know, with the boys in there, or anyone, you know, having coffee, that the most talented guys you see, especially at a young age, they've probably got it, you know, they're making teams, rep teams a lot easier, but that work ethic's missing.
Yeah.
And I get asked a lot by, you know, kids, what advice would you have for a kid to play in the NRL? And nothing's guaranteed, no one's guaranteed anything, but hard work will surpass talent.
When talent doesn't work hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I like that quote, yeah.
Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. So, yeah, and that's, yeah, as you said, it's shown, you know, throughout rugby league in the history. Like, I don't think Shane Webke made a rep team until he was playing Origin.
Yeah, Gordon Tallis, I think, as well.
Yeah, Gordy, you know, there's so many examples of blokes who've just toiled away and just, you know, hard work and persistence is what got them the job, and they get to do it for their life. So
yeah, because I thought this type of story, or, you know, people saying these things would be out there by now, and kids would know about it by now, but they still think, you know, I haven't made this rep team at 18, so I'm just gonna give up and, you know, have
it is, and it is hard to see past that. Like I said, I never ever thought it would be a reality, and I was lucky that I still enjoyed rugby league, even though I wasn't the most talented and I wasn't making the rep teams. So, you know, if you're playing for enjoyment, and if you're a competitive bloke, which, you know, a lot of us rugby league players are, then work ethic is something that should come naturally to you. But yeah, as you said, like, when I can remember when I was under 12s and not making teams, and some kids, you know, were getting scholarships or, you know, a part of academies for the Broncos, and I was, you know, never anywhere.
Yeah.
Never thought of me that I would make it. So, yeah, I just played footy for the love of it, and I was always very competitive, so I just didn't want to get beaten in anything.
Yeah. It's certainly an advice I try and pass on to the younger kids as much as I can. In terms of your, you know, some of the challenges you've had, like, you know, injuries and, you know, what's your mindset to that when something like that happens, especially when it's a bit of a
long-term one? Yeah, it can be tough. Like, you can toil away all pre-season and put in a really good pre-season and, like, nail down a role and nail down a spot in a team, and then 2 weeks into the competition get injured. So all of a sudden you've given that spot up, you know, and it's out of your control. But I've had some really good trainers in the past that have sort of, you know, helped me out with the mental side of things whilst being injured. You've got to still train hard. That's a given, and you've got to still set little goals so that you still tick it off and you're getting that sense of achievement without playing on the weekend, I guess. Getting the sense of winning, still winning and still wanting to win without playing on the weekend. And it can be hard because you can be sidelined. When I tore the medial off my knee at Penrith, you know, we were going pretty well. We started the season pretty well. Tore my knee, tore my medial off the bone. So that's, I think I was out for 11 weeks. And they won 11 games on the trot.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sitting on the sideline going, wow, how am I going to break back into this team? Like, what, you know, I'm missing out on all this stuff. But there's a way you can look at that. You can look at, oh, I'm missing out on all this, or how am I going to get back in the team? Or you can focus on getting your knee right and what your job is at that time is to get your body right and not worry about breaking back into the team, but be happy that you're a part of that team that's winning 11 in a row, because when you do come back in, you'll come back into a team that's absolutely flying, so it makes it easier to come back in.
Yeah.
rather than, you know, come back into a team that's not going so well, and you probably put too much pressure on yourselves to bring them back into the competition. But yeah, it was quite easy for me to come back in.
Yeah, so the difference there is focusing on what you can control and
yes,
letting go of what you can't control.
That's it, exactly right.
Yeah, I think a lot of the downward spiral you see, especially guys, and I've been caught up in it as well, focused on something you can't control, especially when injured, and then you know you get down about it. You know, you start to have a few drinks, a few more drinks than you should be
while you're
injured, and then you know. But as soon as you focus on what you can control, which is your effort, you know, staying competitive, getting on that bike, setting some targets, and achieving them, I think certainly helps. You know, with a mindset,
100%,
and puts you back on track to make the team.
Keeps you in a positive mindset, mate. And as you said, you know, if you're injured and your team's won and you're sitting at home one night, you might think, oh, I'm just going to have a couple of beers. And all of a sudden that becomes a habit.
Yeah.
And it's hard to stamp that out when you get back onto the footy field, and then all of a sudden your form will slip and you'll be out of the team again. So, yeah, stay focused, stay driven, set goals, and only worry about what you can control.
And in terms of habits, what you just said there, was there ever any bad habits that you had to – get rid of?
Definitely, yeah.
Play first grade?
And we all have them. You know, we all go through stages. 100%. We all go through our highs and lows. When I was under 20s, you know, I had an opportunity to go down to the Roosters. And I went down there and I went from, you know, this kid living in Brisbane and went down to Sydney and started partying in Sydney. And I thought, gee, Sydney goes all right. The parties are good down here. But probably got caught up in the partying a little bit too much. And then they had an option at the end of the year to whether to keep me or let me go, and they let me go. So, you know, whether it was because of the partying or, you know, I'm not sure why, but I definitely know that the partying wasn't helping my form. And, yeah, if I could change anything, I probably wouldn't do that. But you learn from that. And, I got shafted from the Roosters and had to move back home to Charleville and work for Mum and Dad at the Bury Pairs. So it was really, you know, probably grounded me again. And I was lucky enough the Walkers rang me back up and said, come back down here, you know, what are you doing? Because I'd probably given up at that stage and thought, oh, like, I don't actually have what it takes or whatever. So I was really lucky there. But and that's the downward spiral you talk about. You know, you get a few bad habits, downward spiral, all of a sudden you don't think you're good enough. All of a sudden you're back over and miles back in Charleville.
Yeah, just from little decisions like that at times. You know, I just want to dig a bit more into that, you know, that moment where you're about to decide to get the beer out of the fridge or open the bottle of red wine. And I've certainly been guilty of that. What does the conversation in your own mind look like when you're trying to break that habit for, you know, at least a couple of months?
What happened was I had to move back to Ipswich and start being a chippy again. So I was waking up at 5 every morning, so I couldn't have a beer every night. But I guess, you know, I was, you know, moved back to being on, you know, a very small wage and couldn't afford to go out every weekend and couldn't afford to do all that stuff. So that I guess put me on the straight and narrow. But once you get I guess out of those habits, it's easy to maintain it, if that makes sense. So, you know, once you're not going out every weekend, it's easy to not go out every weekend. I end up buying a boat, which, you know, cost me all my money, but then I had no money to go out, so I'd go fishing every weekend, which is free. Not only is it free, it's, you know, it's a lot better than getting on the piss every day.
Feeling
every weekend.
Healthier,
and it's good. Get outside and have a fish. I love it now.
Yeah, no, it's a good tip. I get asked about, you know, habits a lot, and they're not easy to break, but you can certainly put a few things in place that'll help you, you know, break them. And yours was obviously a work schedule, so
yeah,
maybe for some people that's planning to train early in the morning, 5 a.m., so you can have a good night's rest and go do some gym, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Bad training habits. I don't think you're not the type of guy to have cut corners or...
I don't really like doing weights, but it's something that I've had to, you know, especially squats, because my knees just seem to disagree with them, but it's something that you have to do. And I've always, you know, I've never been one to cut corners or anything like that, but I've always dreaded going into the weights room. And it's something that you just have to, I guess, you know, bite down on the mouth guard and attack it and still set those goals and try and get better and better each week.
Weights is one of those, you know, just shit things at the middle of the day when you've been flogged all morning, you've turned up early, you've had a wrestle session, boys are running into each other, lunch break, and then you know, you're feeling a bit tired at that point. You kind of wish you could just sleep for the rest of the afternoon, but then you got to wake yourself up, go lift some weights.
Yeah.
And not only that, trainers usually got the heaviest weight set up for you.
That's right, yeah.
You know, I've always just, you know, gone to a bit of pre-workout and stuff like that to help wake up. But there's also a mentality behind attacking that weight session.
Yeah.
Is anything you tell yourself to get up for it, or and I know you're not much of a complainer.
Yeah.
You never whinge in the gym or anything, but is there anything you tell yourself to get past that feeling of fatigue and tiredness?
I was lucky enough when I was at the Sharks, it was my first time doing full time preseason. It wasn't very easy on the body, you know, after not being used to training every day, to just training absolutely every day and to as hard as you can train, it takes its toll. But there were some stages there where I think, oh, weights, like, I hate weights. You know what I mean? Continuing on, I get back off the field and, you know, showered up and going over to have lunch. And then, like you say, you feel like you could just fall asleep on a seat. And as we're walking back across the field to get ready for weights, look over and there's a massive construction site at Cronulla whilst I was there, and they built all these units. And I'd look back over there and go, I think I'd rather lift weights than be there for the next 5 hours, you know what I mean? So those blokes up there are doing it harder than I am. So go in and do your hour's weights, and then you can, you know, go and do some physio or whatever. And
it's not that hard.
It's only an hour and a half, you know, of hard work, rather than those poor blokes up there working for the next 4 hours hard. So,
and by about like 15-20 minute mark, when you're into your weight session, you've, you know, all the dopamine.
Yeah, the music's going out. And start enjoying it, you know. And
yeah. There is a little art to it. Some guys still complain through the whole hour.
Gary. Gary.
Oh, Gary. Yeah. There's what you just said right there, you know, the construction workers on the side. Someone asked me, how do you get mentally tougher? And I always, my answer is simple. You always think of someone else who's going through a lot harder than what you are. And whether that's, you know, someone, I always think of like, someone in the village, having to walk kilometers to get a hunt or get food. I can just walk down to a cafe and buy a $10 sandwich. So,
even some guys over there having to walk to go lift weights if they want to go and train somewhere, they're gonna have to walk somewhere.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So that little technique right there makes you mentally tougher straight away.
Yeah,
and it takes all the complaining out of you. Hey guys, just gonna take a quick break from this episode. I want to mention Cuts Clothing. They've been a sponsor of mine for a couple of months now, and now they're sponsoring the episode. So I just want to talk a little bit about them. So these guys make elite apparel for the modern professional. As you can see, I've got the polo on, the cap. I enjoy wearing them every day, and I like to put myself in that modern professional category. And so every Cut shirt is designed to provide a perfectly tailored fit. Plus, Cuts has all the essentials for looking sharp, like tees, polos, caps, hoodies, and more, so you can look and feel good no matter what the occasion is. Now, I wouldn't say I know too much about fashion, but one thing I do know is that Cuts have mastered the art and science of perfecting the men's tees. I wear these shirts for meetings, podcasting, catching up with friends at a cafe or a restaurant, or just when I'm at home spending time with my family. And because you guys are mindset listeners, Cuts have allowed me to give you guys 15% off your total order. Head to cutsclothing.com, that's CUTSclothing.com, and enter DavidMead15 at checkout. All right, let's get back into the episode. Okay, in terms of emotional and mental well-being, have you ever gone through times that have been tough? And how?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, you know, as I've already talked about, times where you get dropped or you have an injury, you know. I've been through plenty of times where you're upset, you're down, you think, oh, you know, is it all worth it? Like, why don't I just go home and be with my family? Because obviously I've been away from my family for a long time. I'm so lucky that I have such good people around me. Like I said, with the walkers, you know, they are pretty much my family, and they looked after me. So, you know, I owe a lot to the Walker brothers and the whole Walker family. But even, you know, my mum and dad and my brothers, you know, just phone calls, checking in with people, and it's been, you know, it's been a long road, don't get me wrong. There's bumps all the way along, so I've been very lucky that they've been there for me all the way.
And I know you've won a premiership with Penrith. I won one with the Ipswich Jets, 2015 that was.
Yep.
I had a couple of mates I think you played with. Tice.
Yep.
Rod was a part of the squad as
Rod,
well.
Big Rod was there, yeah.
Yeah.
Richie Pandya.
Richie was there, yeah. What was that like winning that first premiership? I want to talk about the Penrith and Origin after as well, but what was that Ipswich?
Yeah, so it was amazing. Obviously, having started at Ipswich as soon as I'd come out of school, my brother was also in that team as well, so it was awesome to be able to play with Liam. And, you know, Kieran Landers was our captain. I grew up with him out west. He's from Quilpie, you know, out past Charleville. So it was such a strong, bonded team. We often used to say it was a team of misfits and rejects, you know, because we sort of were. We were a team of, you know, people that not many other teams or squads wanted.
Yeah.
And that's full credit to the Walker brothers for getting everyone together and really being able to upskill each person individually and work out, you know, like, oh, you need to be good at this is where you need to work on, and being able to upskill everyone and, you know, stick to their digs about their style of footy that they thought would work. And it did. It went on to, you know, the year before we won it, we went into the finals and, you know, there was a couple of drop balls, but if it wasn't for the couple of drop balls, you know, like a fair chance we would have gone on to win it that year. So we had an awesome year then in 2015, went on to win the grand final. I actually done my ankle in the grand final. So I missed out on playing the national championship the following week down before the grand final. But they won the national championship, which is played before the NRL grand final. So it's on the big stage. And it was awesome just to go down there and watch that and be a part. That was the Broncos Cowboys grand final. So it was awesome. Yeah. I got to watch that for free. Partied pretty good afterwards too, I guess.
Well-deserved party, yeah.
But that's the thing. You celebrate once all the hard work's done.
Yeah, and the Penrith Grand Final. What was that like?
That was pretty amazing. So, obviously, you know, we'd made it to the Grand Final the year before, and I wind it back a bit. When I went to Cronulla the first year, when I debuted, I was a part. They went on to win a premiership that year, and, you know, it was pretty awesome just to be a part of that. And, you know, I played in a couple of the finals games and then missed out on the grand final because Big Taggers actually came back from injury, Big Sam Taggers Easy. Yeah. So he's a legend and he came back from a broken shoulder about 3 weeks early, which knocked me out of the team. Thanks, yeah. Taggers. Nah.
I'm good mates with Taggers, yeah. So I'll make sure, you know, I'll send this clip to him.
Yeah. Nah. Taggers, he's,
what do you have to come back?
Yeah. Would have only been my fifth NRL game and it would have been the grand final, but... No, you know, Taggers had played there all year, so he deserved it. But it was awesome just to be a part of that squad. And that was the maiden premiership for Cronulla. They'd never won one. So just to see, I guess, the community and everyone, all the fans get around that, it was awesome. Moving forward to Penrith, we had a pretty good year. Like I said, we went on that massive run. We pretty much won every game but the grand final that year. So it was very disappointing to lose the grand final, especially to Melbourne. Because I don't like Melbourne. I've got too many mates in the Melbourne team. But we went on. I was lucky enough after that, as soon as we lost that grand final, you know, everyone was down. Now, I got called into that Origin camp and ended up playing Origin and winning Origin as, you know, the worst Queensland team ever. So I went from the lowest of lows to one of the highest of highs within a month.
Yeah. And because the Origin was at the end of the year.
Yeah, the Origin was at the end of the year. So... it really just picked me straight back up and put me back up where I probably needed to be, and then came into the next year and, you know, we came out of the gates flying again, as we, you know, Penrith do, and went on, you know, pretty good run that year too, and went into lockdown with COVID, and we all got moved around. Each team got based in different places. We were lucky enough to get Twin Waters, so we were right on the beach at the Sunny Coast. Yeah,
it's a good spot, that one.
Yeah, love and life. But with that came, I guess, it brought us together even more because you're living together, eating together, every day, training together.
Yeah.
So it really brought us together even more in that bubble, and it just made our bond even stronger. We had so many blokes that were injured that year, playing with injuries through that final series. You know, we missed the first final. We got beaten, you know what I mean? And everyone sort of called us down and out because we had so many injuries. But somehow we found a way to win the next game and then the next game, and then all of a sudden we're in the grand final. And I guess once we got there, I was that confident that we're no chance. And I said it for the whole time. I said, we're no chance of losing. Like, we're not going to lose. I don't know what it was. It was just no one in that team was going to let us lose.
Yeah.
Dill Edwards had a broken foot and he played in the grand final and was probably one of our best players. Like,
yeah.
No one was going to let you down. No one was going to let you lose. Nathan's shoulder was cooked.
Yeah. How do you put that into words, eh?
It's hard, yeah. And I guess because it meant so much to us after, obviously, the year before, pretty much going all the way undefeated and then losing the grand final. It was like, I guess the next time we got there, it just meant so much to us. And like I said, we'd all committed so much by moving to the Sunny Coast, living together, eating together. It was just, we weren't going to let each other down. And, to win it, obviously, I'd already signed at the Broncos too, so I knew I was leaving and I just knew that, you know, I wasn't going to leave there as a loser, so left there as a winner, and it was awesome. You know, I was lucky enough to go back down to Penrith and we'd done a street parade and seen what it meant to that community, and you won't find many more passionate people than, you know, Western Sydney and the Penrith region. It's it was awesome to be a part of that, and, yeah, something I'll never forget.
Outstanding, you know, result, obviously, after a year of losing the grand final. Would have been disappointing, but Origin picked you up, set you in a good stead for the preseason and the following year.
Yeah.
And then playing Origin, just a little bit more about that. What was the moment like when you got when you first got the call up that you'd be
The first the
Maroons jersey on?
Yeah, it was weird, man. It was Wayne was the coach, and if anyone's had anything to do with Wayne, he's a hard man to read. I don't know if anyone could get a read on him, but I didn't know that I was. Yeah, I didn't know if I was playing. Didn't know where I was playing. I was training in the back row and in the centres. And Wayne said to me, Kurt, I'll get you to train in the centres today. Tomorrow, he told me the night before, get you to train in the centres tomorrow, mate. How do you feel in the centres? I said, oh, yeah, I'll play anyway, Wayne. Like, I don't worry. Righto, well, make sure you jump in the centres tomorrow. And I said, righto, Wayne. Anyway, go to get in the centres, and our assistant coach comes over and says, Capes, come over here. We're going to do this drill with I need a back rower over it. So I trot over to be the back rower on this other drill, and I won't swear on the podcast, but where the Cape will is Wayne yelling out. And then I said, oh, yeah, Wayne. He goes, I told you to train in the centres, and give me a big rundown in front of everyone. So at that stage, I thought, okay, well, he wants me to play centres, and I get, you know, you could take that one or two ways. You could get really shy because, you know, the coach is yelling at you. But I took it as him putting confidence in me.
Yeah.
His confidence in me, you know what I mean? So I took it as a positive when he was yelling at me and giving me a dress down in front of everyone. I remember jogging across to go to the centres, and Big pups are in the middle of the field just giggling. He goes, get in the centres.
Yeah, that's a... I spent a bit of time with Wayne in 2017 Bronx, and that was a weekly occurrence for some of the lads.
Yeah, so...
I think he's got that real care factor about him, which is...
Yeah.
You know, and he's pretty honest up front in front of everyone, and everyone appreciates that about him, so... Yeah, that's a funny story, that.
That was the moment when I sort of clicked in my head, okay, well, I'll probably... Seems like I'm going to be playing in the centres. And then after that training, I trained pretty well. And after that training, he came to see me. He goes, you know, you'll be playing centres. So then, you know, from then on, I was an Origin player. And the feeling of putting that jersey on for the first time was over in Adelaide, running out. I'll never forget it. The amount of emotion that hits you, the emotion just, it almost, you know, like you're almost crying running out. It's unbelievable. And I guess you use that energy in the game, and yeah, there's nothing like Origin. From me, if I was to choose to you know, it's hard to pick between grand final win and Origin win, but
it's pretty close.
Jeez, Origin's very special to me and something that I've always grown up, you know, loving. So,
what did the conversation look like when you rang the family or when they found out?
Oh yeah, they're just, you know, they were straight away looking up the COVID things, protocols. how many tickets can you get, Kurt?
They must have been pretty proud, though. Like,
yeah, they were over the moon. They were over the moon, you know. As I said, I probably none of us thought we could, that I'd ever play Origin, let alone NRL, let alone Origin. So
yeah, well, you see that, you know, what you said earlier about there's a 3% of players that make it. You weren't that confident in yourself. But I think you had a lot of those habits in place. You know, the Walker brothers calling you up to do the extra 3 nights of training, which certainly helped. And I know that's a lot more than some guys would probably plan to do or anticipate in doing. And that's probably seen as extras to some people, but for you it was just kind of a normal thing because it was just fun and enjoyable.
Yeah, it was, and I enjoyed it. That's, like I said, it makes it easy when you enjoy something.
Yeah, and a lot of things I try and pass on is I've always been big on extras and, you know, doing extra training because I've never been talented. To this day, I still can't pass properly. I can catch all right.
Yeah.
But my passing, I've always practiced it, but I think all those passing drills more so help me catch more than pass, you know?
Yeah.
And so I've been big on those. Kicking, not my game.
Lucky you're a winger.
Yeah. Tackling even, you know?
Yeah.
Fitness, speed, a little bit of speed, but these are all things a lot of other people have over you, but you got to find a way to work hard and to put yourself in a good position to make the team.
Yeah.
And I think you kind of did that with, you know, obviously the help of Walker Brothers there as well. But yeah, to go from the 20s system, not necessarily backing yourself for the 3% of people that make it, to Origin Premiership winner, a multiple Premiership winner with Jets and Penrith, pretty good achievement, and you know, a lot of people wish to have that. And a lot of guys who, you know, go through their careers, like myself, never get to that Premiership. It can be a thing that's, you know, hard to transition out of footy from for some guys. But eventually when you transition, you kind of look back and go, I learnt a lot of lessons from footy, and taking those lessons out and applying them into the business or professional world has certainly helped me become a, you know, winner in this space. So
yeah.
Some lessons that you've learnt from the game that you think will be transferable from, you know, outside of hard work. If I can get a little bit more technical with you.
Yeah.
Outside of hard work, is there any lessons that you think will help you
in the real world?
In the real world,
yeah.
While you play, or, you know, after you play, after you finish playing.
Yeah, I guess you know, once I finish playing, I think it's something that I've thought about, and you know, everyone says you need a plan and whatnot. I think I'll definitely try and remain in a team environment somewhere, because most of the skills from rugby league transferable in a team environment for me. But I guess personally, it's comes back to worry about things that, you know, you can change, and don't worry about the things that you can't. That's something that's transferable in all life, in all matters in life. And then also little things like setting goals, ticking them off, having a routine, stuff like that definitely keeps you, you know, on the right path.
Yeah, because a lot of athletes who have transitioned, they've struggled in that space as well, and I've only had 3 months of it. I had about a month of too much flexibility, too much time.
I heard he put a bit of weight on.
to me, my wife's in the background. She's not here right now, but yeah. So that for that 6 weeks, there's a mirror on the side, and when we're sitting there, you can obviously see your whole body shape. And so I'm sitting there and typing away. By this stage, I'd been snacking on biscuits and 4 coffees a day. I sat there and I pushed my stomach out a little bit. It came out too bad. So Tanil looked at me and said, "Get your ass in the gym."
Yeah.
She signed me up. But there's a little thing there that you can, a little trap there that you can fall into, going away from your own training habits and not putting a plan in place, like you said. And I guess a lot of advice that I've received from guys who have done well or who have come out of that is having a plan for when you finish, or having a schedule, structure.
Yeah. We go from, you know, getting told what to do every day. We get told what to eat. We get told when we're going somewhere, what to wear, how long for, what time our flight is. It gets booked for us. We get everything done for us. So you go from being in the ultimate structured schedule that gets given to you to having to plan that yourself is a bit different.
Yeah, and that is probably the biggest lesson that I've learned transitioning. I actually had to go see a therapist. Not that I was, you know, I was in bad shape. just flat, tired most of the day, you know, moping around the house sometimes.
Training is probably one of the best things for your mental health is training. So once you, if you get that taken away from you as well, it makes it hard.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, having that structure in place has certainly helped me to get back on track. So I think some tips for people who have athletes who have retired or are planning to retire, I think that's very important. So, Capes, as we get closer towards the end of the podcast, I've just got a few rapid-fire type questions. Fun, nothing too serious. I don't think you'll get stumped by any of them, but just for a little bit of fun. Do you have a favourite quote, saying, or you know, or a way of living life?
As I said before, there's so many quotes out there that resonate with myself, but one of my favourite is hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, because that's something where, you know, I'm proof of that, and, you know, there's plenty of players that are proof of that as well. So that would be my favourite quote in the rugby league world.
If you were an animal, what would you be?
And a dolphin.
A dolphin. Why dolphin?
Few people would know why.
All right, no details.
Yeah.
Dolphin, all right. Well, they seem pretty friendly and hardworking. If there are three people you would invite to dinner, who and why?
Ooh, that's tough. Alfie Langer would have to get in there for one reason. He's the entertainment. He's the head of entertainment. And then I guess it's tough. I had a grandfather that I never met because he obviously passed away before I was born, but I would love to, you know, I've heard so many stories about him. He's in the Stockman's Hall of Fame. He was tough. He was, you know, he's a hard worker. So I would have liked to have a dinner with him. And then Kevin Hart, because I find him hilarious. Yeah. And him and Elf side by side, it'd be fight who's the shortest.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting combo. Elf, Kevin Hart.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I'd love to be in a room with those to see it.
Yeah, so that'd be those three.
Do you read much?
I don't read too much. I listen to audio books, podcasts, listen to, you know, Joe Rogan and a few podcasts, but not a massive reader. Something I never really got into.
Do you have a favourite book?
I have, yeah. So out of the books I've read, it'd probably only be about 15 books I've ever read. I reckon The Resilience Project book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you read it?
Yeah. What's his name?
Hugh.
Hugh, yeah. Yes. He's done a lot of talks around NRL and different organisations.
He was in us with Origin Camp too. And his book is amazing. That story is it's awesome. I could read it again, you know what I mean? Like, it's that good. So if anyone out there listening wants to read a book, get on it. The Resilience Project.
By?
Hugh Van Cullenberg.
Okay.
If that's how you say your last name, Hugh. Sorry if it's not.
Have you got a favourite meal?
Yes. Beef Wellington.
Beef Wellington? What's that?
Beef Wellington. It's a fillet. So you get a chunk of eye fillet or you get a chunk of meat, steak, and wrap it in pastry. Inside you put mushrooms, a bit of gravy,
yeah,
and throw it in the oven. Oh, the best.
That sounds all right. I've never actually...
You never had it?
Never had
well,
it.
Well, there you go. Yeah. You've got to go and try it now.
I'll try one out, yeah.
Or Vegemite chops, which a lot of people have never had.
Vegemite chops.
Lamb chops, yeah. Put a bit of Vegemite on them, then cook them on the barbecue and thank me later. Meaty, everyone who tries it, send in to Meaty how much you liked it. So.
All right, well, we'll get some feedback from listeners and viewers on that.
Yeah.
I know we've given a lot of advice to kids wanting to play NRL. If you had to answer it in two sentences, what would be some advice you'd give to a kid in a short, sweet answer?
Yeah, I'll just work hard and have fun and never give up. That's it. And you should get there, I reckon.
Yeah.
If you follow those things.
What do you tell yourself just before you run out to play a game?
Obviously we turn our headphones off, warm up, and have our huddle, do our chant. And then my first thing I say to myself when I'm on the field, I run out, I look around, take in the atmosphere, and the first thing I say is, righto, first run and first tackle. That's the only things I worry about. And that just gets me straight into the game. Yeah. I find sometimes when I don't get a touch of the ball or if I don't get involved early, I don't really have that good a game. So I like getting involved early and just starting the game. And once you get into the game, it's like old habits, you know, they come out.
Same for Origin, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Well, except times 100 for the emotion.
Yeah. Capes, you know, it's been a pleasure having you on. I know you've left a lot of golden gems in the podcast. I know a lot of listeners, they're majority rugby league fans, and especially PNG as well. A lot of kids look up to you, so I thank you for that. But before we finish, do you have any final thoughts?
Final thoughts, guys. Here's my final thoughts. David Mead, what a legend. Meady, I was on it. You know, I was so lucky to have Meady at the Broncos with me at the start of the year. He's a veteran of the game. He's been around. He's learnt a lot. And we were very lucky to have him at the Broncos so he could pass on that knowledge to a lot of our younger boys. And we've had some good chats in the saunas and in the ice bath. And, mate, it's been an absolute privilege. So thank you.
Heaps. Thanks for the wrap, mate. Much appreciate that. And, you know, one thing I do miss about rugby league is the sauna sessions.
Yes.
That was a favourite routine of mine, going in and, you know, having that conversation with the boys.
Yeah.
A bit of banter. But it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast, mate. Appreciate your time. And what a way to kick off the new podcast mindset. Kirk Capewell, thank you very much.
Thank you.